You know, a lot of people are starting to think that perhaps I'm not the sharpest knife on the tree, that I'm not the brightest bulb in the drawer. And for them, to each and every one of them, here's what I would say. Whatever. Okay, and now moving on, we have this Peter King article, list, rather. Y'all like power rankings. No, there isn't anyone you can find that loves sports that don't like the power rankings. Any sport. But the NFL one is the cool one.
Especially June 1st.
Oh, especially when it counts. Especially when we know everything after just one OTA session. Okay? We know it all. I don't know how Peter King got all this information, but, well, he's Peter King. That's most of it. The information comes to you. So he's got the Minnesota Vikings listed on his power rankings list at number 6. Give us a call, 651-989-9105, if you'd like to join in on this. We're going to delve into it again. We did it earlier in the show, but I just the list again. Sam Ekstrom filling in today for Ben Holson, Brian Murphy from the Pioneer Press, myself. We've been going through this before the show, during the show, earlier, and now again. And I still go ahead and start from the top. It's just one of those lists. And you think Peter King said this? Go ahead.
Numero uno. The Baltimore Ravens.
The Ravens.
Nearly got to the AFC Championship last year, but they fell to New England. They're number one.
I don't know how you do that. They've had some change. I mean, granted, they lost Haloti Ngata. Not that they can't replace someone like that. I think they can, but there's some big pieces to that puzzle that just are not the same. Didn't they lose Torrey Smith, and another receiver, didn't they? I'll come up with, but you know, everything else is pretty much intact. The offensive line and of course the quarterback. So that's what they like about that team. That's obviously what they're going for. But one ahead of New England? That's surprising to me.
Indianapolis?
From him. Indianapolis. Now granted, Indianapolis's defense is not exactly the most stellar defense, as we found out during Deflategate. Because they got beat by the Patriots with flat footballs, apparently. Who else?
Seattle. Number two, probably appropriately ranked,
yes.
I would say.
They just get better.
Jimmy Graham.
How scary is Jimmy Graham going to Seattle? I was just going to say that. That's flat-out scary. Are you going to give Jimmy... What's wrong with the Saints? They're in the same damn conference. Now it definitely goes through Seattle. They just did them the biggest favor in the world. Jimmy Graham goes to the Seattle Seahawks. I don't know what they don't have now.
Well, you just have to plug in 8 wins automatically at home.
Yeah.
They're going to win
the 12th man, yeah.
All of them. If not, maybe lose one. I think they lost one last year, none the year before.
Arizona beat them at home, at their place. But I'm telling you right now.
The hangover, though. Has there ever been a team coming into a season that hungover for what happened in the Super Bowl?
We talked about this a little bit earlier, too.
It's one thing if you're Scott Norwood and you push the field goal ride left, mm-hmm. you still feel pretty good about yourself.
Correct.
Boy, you have your bread and butter. We could debate this again 4 months later, but it's just that's what I'm going to be interested to see is because I could see them winning 13 games again.
I could, too.
But until you get back to that moment, that's going to dog you. It's going to dog Pete Carroll.
For me, that was the most unbelievable moment. They were knocking on the door of that second Super Bowl to repeat. And Russell Wilson, of course, being so young still, and he should have 2 rings. That's all there is to it. Now, was it a bad play that was called? You know what? It was designed really well. It was run really well. The ball was thrown perfectly, I think.
I mean,
but
the defender made a great play.
Was the most perfect play in the biggest moment of any Super Bowl play I've seen defensively. I've never seen a better play in the Super Bowl than that play and that kid, Malcolm Butler. I mean, just a no-name. He makes the most unbelievable break on that ball and gets in front of it with both hands, intercepts the damn thing just for good riddance. I'm not interfering anyone. This ball is as rightfully mine as it is the receiver's. By the way, here it is. I've got it. Oh, my God. And knocked the guy on his ass, too. I forget which receiver it was. He put him on his ass at the same time. It was amazing. That's Marshawn Lynch all the way. That's 100% beast mode. Third down. Right? It was third down.
And he had just put him down on the goal line.
That's right.
He had just powered through for four or five tough yards. They had the time. This is the thing. We're talking about this in Minnesota 4 months later, so you know this is going to be dogging the Seahawks.
Oh yeah.
And they're gonna close ranks, and it's going to be us versus them. I just want to see how wearing that's going to be.
It's going to be wearing. Pete Carroll. I mean, he's the kind of coach where he loves, lives, breathes. His passion is football. I mean, that's all his world is. He may have made the worst call in sports history. No, it couldn't have happened to a worse guy. He loves
sure.
what he does.
I mean, Belichick would wear that with pride. But with Carroll, you get the sense that, boy, this is a guy that joy.
Yes.
There's not a lot of joy in the NFL, but Pete Carroll exhibits joy.
He does.
And how is this going
to...
I mean,
he'll take it to heart.
He was on the Today Show the next day and almost, looked like his dog got shot in front of him. So.
And it did.
Star, quick question for you going into break. Do you put more blame on Carroll, Bevel, or Russell Wilson for that play?
I'm going to guess. It comes down to Pete Carroll. I mean, he can veto anything that Bevel calls. Russell Wilson, he's told what to do. Can he check it off, or is he supposed to run that thing? I mean, definitely run that. It's the Super Bowl. We want this called. I don't know if he had many choices.
It wasn't a horrible throw.
Or options. It was a good throw. I'm telling you, it was an incredible football play defensively. But, yeah, that's Pete Carroll. I don't care if Bevel called... whatever pass, Carroll could have said, no, it's run. It's the beast mode. It's 24, touchdown, we win. That's what, it's Pete Carroll's goal.
Yeah, poorly conceived to throw it, I think, in a spot where there could be a deflection, there's traffic, there's bodies flying. If I was going to throw the ball there, I would have done a fade where it's at least one-on-one and a little more control.
Our ball or nobody's ball.
Right.
Yeah. Protect your touchdown. Come back and fire another one. Run it. Don't throw it again. Run it if that happens.
See, but, Carroll's taking this to the grave. We're talking about it 4 months later in Minnesota.
He is.
You know this is going to be carved on that headstone.
You know it will be.
Beast?
He deserves it.
Question mode? Beast mode? Question mark.
24. Question mark. What are you thinking? Question mark. Come on back, everybody. We've got plenty to get to. Brandon Warren, Cold Omaha. Could be a run. Could be a pass. We don't know. But he's one of the writers here at 105 The Ticket. So come on back. Nice article on Aaron Thompson, the Twins, the lefty, the quirky lefty. Next.
People ask what Omaha means. It's a run play, but it could be a pass play.
Put it to you like this. I've already said this. It could be a run or a pass. It's kind of what Omaha means. But I have Brandon Warren, and normally it's a pass in this case. It's going to be a pass because it's about a pitcher that he wrote about here at 105 The Ticket, Cold Omaha. You can find it online, right on our show page. And Brandon Warren, Aaron Thompson was your subject. What was he like to talk to?
Very intelligent, actually. It was a pretty fun interview, and he was very accommodating, very friendly, but he definitely went to levels that most fans wouldn't really be interested in, but I found fascinating based on like the ins and outs of pitching. I found him very interesting to talk to.
I can only imagine. I mean, what he was talking about in your article was just amazing. Nothing short of amazing is how he adjusts on the mound to the batter, to the individual batter. He doesn't really adjust or change the pitch. He changes the angle that he comes off the mound.
Yeah, he's keenly aware of how he has to attack guys and make them uncomfortable in the batter's box and get outs. And a guy that's intelligent like that is obviously going to be good fodder for an article. And this is probably one of my favorite things I've written all year. I thought, it was a little bit longer than anything else I've written, but I sat down and wrote it, and it was definitely worth the time.
Brandon, hey, this is Brian Murphy here. I'm actually working on a piece this week, too, on Aaron, and I totally agree. I thought he was one of the most engaging personalities I've kind of come across in a clubhouse. And what's interesting, I mean, tell us a little bit about how he's, I mean, this not only a journeyman, but, I mean, here's a guy that probably would not be on the team, well, certainly would not be on the team, but for Irvin Santana getting popped for taking steroids. So his path not only has been winding through the minors, through several organizations, but the timing and circumstances which got him on the roster and the opportunity to thrive, kind of take us into that.
Well, it's kind of amazing. He was a first-round draft pick in a year that the Marlins had five back when the rules were a little different with compensation. And so they had drafted, I think it was all pitchers. And he got to the big leagues kind of late. He scuffled a little bit. He started off pretty hot. But anyway, scuffled a bit, got traded for Nick Johnson, and the Nationals took away his cutter, which he felt was a huge pitch for him. It's his slider, but he calls it a cutter. And, you know, he washed out with the Nationals, went to the Pirates, didn't even bother bringing it back. And this is a guy who has a career record of 18-46 at Double A, didn't strike anybody else. I mean, for this guy to have worked and toiled long enough to get to the big leagues, and, you know, the other interesting parallel that I found was he made the team because of Irvin Santana's suspension, but when he joined the Twins back in 2012, he was actually popped for a 50-game suspension for a drug of abuse, too. So he's obviously come a long way, the Twins, and he have mended those fences. And you know what? He's done everything he's needed to do and basically got himself into a position where he made the team. And I was surprised. I thought Caleb Fielbar was going to be the guy, but so far, so good with Thompson here in the big leagues.
Brandon, this is your cold Omaha counterpart, Sam Ekstrom, here. I've the most remarkable thing, I believe, in your story was where you talk about Thompson's experience in 2012 and where a light turned on for him, and he could remember the exact moment where his mentality changed. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. He told me about Logan Darnell, who's on the 40-man roster down at Rochester, a left-handed relief pitcher who started a little bit too, so obviously they have some things in common. And I kind of had figured out what exactly he was talking about. He was talking about a stretch that spanned from mid-July to late July, where he was just getting blasted as a starter. And he told me he was just a pitch away from getting out of some of these jams. He'd give up a 3-run home run. And so he's basically in the shower with Logan Darnell. And he just says to Logan, I don't know if I want to cry. I don't know if I want to quit, but something is going to bleep. And he got shifted to the bullpen in mid-August, and just like a light switch flipped on for him, he found something that was going to work for him, and he was solid after that, and you know, they moved him up to Rochester the next year, and here he is.
Brandon, I want to go back a little bit.
Sure.
Did you say that he was in the shower with Logan Darnell?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the minor league facilities are like. You know, it's obviously not the big leagues with the nice dividers and everything, so it might have been just kind of like a, you know, like an old school gym style where you could see each other's faces and kind of commiserate after a game or whatever. I'm not exactly sure what the setup is there.
Well, I just, it confused me for a while, and that's easy to do.
Every man has come to terms with his lot in life in the shower at one time or another.
You know what? It's a matter of either crying or quitting. But I just thought I had to back up and get that finalized. Okay, so, but, yeah. Say locker room next time, Brandon. Say locker room next time. Okay.
You got it.
Damn it.
Clubhouse
wrong
and baseball.
With you in the shower with Logan Darnell. You're a funny kid. What? So this guy, he came in with Pelfrey, didn't he?
No, he was a minor league free agent. The Twins, so Terry Ryan said that, you know, he's obviously got the first-round pedigree. Basically, he said he's got first-round pedigree, he's left-handed, and has a pulse. The Twins are always looking for left-handed arms.
Yeah.
He said more than other organizations, and so they really like him as a minor league priority free agent. Now, you don't usually expect a guy to need, you know, three seasons to make it to the big leagues at that point, but they stuck with him, and he did right by them, and, you know, here we are.
I'd say. And Terry Ryan, I didn't realize it until I read the article that he was actually a right-handed pitcher himself.
Lefty, yeah. Actually, there's a funny story.
He's a lefty, goes, okay.
That big fella, Wayne Hathaway, was rubbing his right arm when Terry Ryan had a sore arm, and afterwards he told him, hey, big fella, I guess you didn't know I was left-handed. And so it's just an old story from the 70s, and that, you know, Big Fella was the trainer. And so people who know Big Fella can kind of see the humor in that situation because he's kind of a wacky guy.
Brandon, do you think Thompson is so effective because the Twins use him for one-out or two-out situations? Because I'm looking at his game log here, and it's .1 innings, .2 innings. They use him for, you know, a tricky lefty here and there because he's so good against left-handed batters. Do you feel like the Twins are sort of protecting him by using him in very specific situations?
You know, it sure seems like it lately. It didn't seem like it at first because he had, when I had researched him, he had as many or actually more appearances getting more than three outs than less than three outs. Now, the thing that we've seen lately with the emergence of Blaine Boyer is that they've kind of been plugging and playing Thompson for an out here and out there to get lefties because that's where his platoon splits dictate that he'd be used. And I think that's if he's going to carve out a role where he sticks with the team for the rest of the year, it's going to be as a situational lefty because he's got a nasty, you know, basically it's a slider that the left-handers have trouble with. And, you know, righties can see it a little better, and that's going to be a difficulty he's going to have to deal with. But for now, yeah, I think they're probably going to, you know, as Casey Fien is now back, they're hoping that bullpen will lengthen out a little bit. They'll eventually go back to 12 guys, but, you know, he'll probably settle in where he faces more lefties than righties. As soon as, you know, they figure out what's going on with Tim Stoff or Brian Duncan, you know, a couple guys who are struggling.
Mike, you'll appreciate this. He is known in the parlance of baseball as a loogie.
Is that what it is?
Lefty, one-out guy. Come in, get your left-handed hitter out, and you're done. He is a loogie.
But in fact, he has, as you put it, Brandon, I think I read in the article, he's been out there eight times for multiple innings and, what, six or seven times with the one-out innings.
Yeah, it's kind of evolved as the season's gone on. At first, he was working, you know, some longer outings to soak up innings, and so I think maybe Paul Molitor is going to dispatch him in a way where, you know, it might be a little bit more, a better way to keep him from being exposed to too many right-handed hitters, just because the struggles he's had this year against right-handed hitters.
Interesting. Brandon, thank you very much for your time. The article was great. It's a great subject, and we'll probably have some follow-up on that with Brian Murphy. He's got something planned with Aaron Thompson as well a little bit later.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Take it easy, Brandon.
Take it easy, and we will come on back and talk. Wait, it's one of my breaks, isn't it? I say we talk a little Viking offensive line then. Let's do that. I mean, we had OTAs, had a little shift in the front up there on the offensive line. Does that tear into the continuity and the choreography of how things are done up front when you switch a lineman from the right to the left side? We're going to talk just like that. You can call us, 651-981. Did I say that? 651-989-9105. And you can talk the talk with us. Come on back.
Played, I was saying high school center in college, but I mean, I also played, you know, both guard positions in college too. So, I mean, left side, it's really not that big of a change. It's really not. Some footwork and some weight distribution, you know, just working on my different techniques. So, I'm fine with it.
Well, there you go. It's called diversity. I'm guessing that's Brandon Fusco, the great one from Slippery Rock. Had an injury last year, but one of the up-and-coming offensive linemen here, no question, his grades were, they were up the year before, and he had earned a spot, a solid spot on this roster, and earned the big contract to prove it. I think he got 4 years at about $20 million, I'm pretty sure, but he deserves it, and then he got hurt. Of course, we know the story. Charlie Johnson, the aging journeyman that we had over on the left side after Hutchinson got out of here, he's now no longer. He's gone. I don't know whether he'll ever play anymore or if he's going to retire. I know he's been around for like 10 years probably at least, Tennessee, yep, the University of Tennessee.
He was Peyton Manning's blindside protector for
Yes, he was. I don't know. The names that they're kicking around right now, of course, Brandon Fusco just commenting on having to move over from right guard to left guard. Seems like it would be easy. He made it sound like it is. And it's not really. In fact, I know some of the best guards in the game that wouldn't want to do it. Just did not even like the idea. It was Randall McDaniel. He didn't like the idea of switching sides at all, period. Just his stance and everything about the balance and the way you do everything and how you work with the left tackle as opposed to a right tackle. But Brandon Fusco is going to be able to do anything. And hell, if he's played it before, then he probably can. But you have to have some time over there working in and out of both stances, you know, with your other hand on the ground. It's just a weird thing to do.
And that's what OTAs and minicamp are for. I think, if anything, well, he's being a good soldier. I mean, they've asked him to do this. It's not anything, any reflection on his play, obviously.
No.
It's a sense of, we think we can move you over to fill a need. Oh, by the way, you might be able to shore a few things up for Matt Khalil as he comes back from injury and a horrid third season.
Yeah.
But we also want to get a look at this Clemens kid, and we want to make life as comfortable as possible for him, certainly in the OTA minicamp period, to see if he can maybe compete for that spot on the right side. If he looks like he's a disaster over there, or if Fusco looks like he's just not fitting in there, I mean, they can certainly, you know, circle back, but then you still have the glaring hole at left guard.
Yes,
so I think what they're looking to do is take a proven commodity, plug him in there, run the risk with the rookie on the right side.
And Clemmings has never played right guard before, so that's another new position for him. He was a tackle at Pittsburgh. Then they had a workout before the draft with Jeff Davidson, the offensive line coach for the Vikings, where they said, if you were drafted by the Vikings, we would try you at right guard. The Vikings were already eyeing him for that spot. So they've been setting this up for a long time. They told Fusco about a month ago, and here we are now, maybe with both guards playing the position for the first time in their careers.
I can see what they're doing, and I'm glad they're doing it the way they are. Number one, T.J. Clemmings, or Clemens, I don't know how he's going to go by that last name.
Ings. It's I-N-G.
Ings.
Ings,
yep. So it's and I watched a lot of film, tons of games on YouTube, and the guy can play football at right tackle, so I know he can play right guard. You can come in and play right guard. If you can stand up there and play right tackle and do what you're supposed to do, it's actually a more compact, easier area to block if you're that kind of guy. So a tackle can normally make that transition. As long as he's good out in open space, when you're pulling and you're getting out in open space and you're tracking a linebacker or defensive back down the field, depending on what kind of offense you run.
More of a run blocking
type thing. I like the fact that he's played on the right side. Let's keep the rookie on the right side in front of the quarterback. You know, at least the quarterback can see where it's coming from. Take the veteran football player, the established guy, and an up-and-coming football player, Brandon Fusco, and put him over on the left side if he feels he can put his hand on the ground over there and let him man up. He's got the experience. The quarterback can trust more Brandon Fusco at left guard than putting a rookie over there at his back.
But that being said, now you have two question marks on the left side, do you not? And does one cancel each? I mean, does Fusco elevate Khalil a little bit?
I think he does. I think he actually does. It was Mike Zimmer that actually brought up two or three or four different examples of some of the things that people see on the football field that make it look as if the perception is Matt Khalil. And Sam, you were there with me down at Winter Park when he ran through that. Funny enough, if you know and see what scheme they're in and what they're actually doing to block, it's not Khalil's fault. It's maybe he could have settled a little bit deeper to help out, but it was Charlie Johnson. It just was. Charlie was not to be had inside where Khalil thought he was going to be, and he was not there. So he comes through and he makes the big sack, and everyone is like, Matt Khalil just whiffed again, and he didn't. So, and he made two or three references to that, and the knee issues too, and everything else. But I think Fusco he's a battler. He's got a mean streak, and he's always had that. That was what they found in him when he came out of Slippery Rock at Combine. This kid had a mean streak. He was battling people. And he had to do that to win that job over at the right side. He was scrappy in practice, and Davidson loves him.
That's a pedigree, though, too.
Yeah.
You come up from Slippery Rock, and you're trying to prove yourself. I mean, he's an alley fighter.
He is. He's a scrapper, and he'll just jump in there and just eat you alive. You know, he just won't give you any air.
And two points to mention, too, on the Khalil situation. Khalil got his fifth-year option.
Yep.
Which means that the team trusts him, and also Charlie Johnson's still unsigned. There are people out there who have seen the tape, the Vikings included, who know that it wasn't all Matt Khalil's fault. It was not as much his fault as people want to blame him for. And a lot of fans will, and still do, think that Khalil was to blame for all of the pass protection issues, when really it becomes an issue, like you said, Star, of planting yourself either too far back or too far forward, not giving that inside shoulder help. And the common fan can't recognize that, but I think the Vikings do.
They certainly do. And like you said, the rest of the league, funny enough, Charlie's not, hasn't landed. Now, maybe he didn't want to play any more football. I don't know. But he's not signed yet. And if you take enough look at the film and slide protections, you'll see that your tackle is waiting for that guard to take up and occupy half of that guy. And so he's punching with the right inside hand. He's left tackle, and he's waiting for the guard to come over and give him the other half so he can bounce out here to a possible outside rusher off the linebacker. And Charlie's not there. And he just comes off the inside shoulder of Khalil, and it looks like he's whiffed and just overset his guy, but he didn't do it.
And all, you know, the knee troubles that he really, to his credit, didn't use as a shield. They were sort of unknown how serious they were, yeah. And the procedures that he had to get cleaned up. He's also thickened up a little bit more. Probably put on another 15 pounds this year.
I thought he got too light.
And then I think too, he internalized a lot of his struggles. I mean, he knew he was getting blasted by fans and in the media, and then. He knows he didn't handle it very well. I mean, you know, he comes out after that game against Green Bay, and he's on his phone, and some fan heckles him, and he knocks the hat off, and it's caught on a tape, and it's out on YouTube, and it becomes another day's story where he's got to come out and apologize for it. It just sort of compounded. It was just sort of a year of misery, physically, mentally, exhausting for him. And he's not going to throw Charlie under the bus and say, "Look, my guard wasn't there for me, folks. If you know the game, this is what happened."
He was a full-grown man about it. He didn't throw anyone under the bus. I give him credit for that or griping about his knees.
But that means it's put up or shut up now, too, because they've invested in him.
They're fixing all this.
It's
the knees. You're telling us you're good, right?
Yep. Everything's good.
He told us he was good last year when he had the little knee thing before before training camp.
Not
he's
an
good.
Issue.
Oh,
nothing
okay,
to see
good.
Here.
Okay. Yeah, well, we got a different story, didn't we, Sam? He came up to the office and told Coach Zimmer about halfway through the season or with like six games left to go, "My knees are killing me."
Yep.
Get something for it. Coach, what are you telling the head coach? You got bad knees. What can I do for my...
Take a needle.
Do something. Do something. Take something. Mike Tyson would have him on painkillers by now.
Worry about your liver later.
Yeah, exactly.
Take the needle now.
I mean, come on. It's the NFL. Take a pill. Not funny. Probably shouldn't have said that. Twins are on a roll.
Truth hurts.
No, wait. NBA. Let's talk a little NBA with Sam Ekstrom, shall we? You want to come back and talk that? Oh, no.
Let's do it.
Let's do that one next. And then we'll break it up and we'll tell you what else is next. Twins, we got Sillier Side of Sports. We got the True Superstar. This ain't over yet. Come on back. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if you're following this, it couldn't get much better in the NBA for the finals. For me, at least, LeBron gets another shot at another one, and I think we're all trying to compare him to Kobe, to Michael. How many rings can he gather, and can he bring it back home to Cleveland now, of all places? And then there's Curry, and that's a story, too. I mean, I just think that's an incredible thing going on out there in Golden State. Sam Ekstrom's been following it. And do you think that LeBron can get this done and bring a championship to Cleveland, a city, a place where it just has not happened?
It's going to be awfully hard. LeBron has been carrying this team all postseason. He carried them in the Eastern Conference Finals against Atlanta. He's banged up. Kyrie Irving has a knee and a foot issue. Kevin Love is out, and Bleacher Report just reported a few minutes ago that he re-aggravated his shoulder celebrating the conference finals victory. So there you go, another knuckle push-ups issue with Kevin Love. But in LeBron's case, we talk about legacies. And if LeBron had taken advantage of more of these finals opportunities, we'd be putting him above Michael Jordan by now, because this is his sixth NBA finals, and he's only 2-3. He's lost three of them. He's lost more than he's won. He, in his previous stint with Cleveland, lost to San Antonio. Then he lost to Dallas in his first year in Miami, lost to San Antonio with Miami again last year. But the series this reminds me most of is when LeBron's Heat team took on the upstart Oklahoma City Thunder, this team that was on the rise. They were the best team in the Western Conference. They had Durant. They had Westbrook. People thought they were going to run over the Heat. kind of how people think the Warriors are going to run over the Heat, and LeBron willed them to victory in that series. And that's what the Warriors will have to watch out for, because even though they're favored in this series, the best player between either team is on the other side, and that's LeBron James. And the way he carried them against Atlanta, you don't know how they're going to stop them. You really don't.
Yeah.
You only slow them down.
You can only hope to contain him and make the rest of the Cavaliers do the work, but you can slow him down and make his night miserable and let the rest try and beat you. That probably isn't going to happen. You're right. And then a prolific scorer with Curry out there in Golden State and Thompson. I mean, those guys can play. They can play.
This roster, Golden State, I mean, they were built for this moment, were they not? I mean, this was.
I think so.
I mean, this is their time. This was put together for a run of this kind of, and I think, what, 42-2 or something at home. I mean, that is a place. It's a wild place to play. They're an exciting team.
They are.
This is a great matchup for the NBA. They generally are. I mean, I'm not saying the Spurs are always boring, but people got, I think, a little tired of the dynasty and the machinery, as it were. This is a clash of real titans right now.
I agree.
It's good to see some new blood finally coming out of the Western Conference. 13 out of the previous 16 years, it had been the Lakers or the Spurs. And you like to talk about the legacies, yes, but at some point you want to see the next generation. That's what we have in Golden State. Steph Curry is an offensive machine, maybe one of the best off-the-dribble scorers we've ever seen from long range. And they have two-way players with Draymond Green and Klay Thompson who are going to make life very difficult on LeBron, because if one of them is on the bench, the other one could conceivably step in and play some pretty solid defense. Andrew Bogut is a good defender. That's their center. Andre Iguodala can come off the bench as a sixth man and defend. And this is not a team that's only built around the offense. This is a team that can shut you down defensively with a lot of lanky guys. Harrison Barnes, another example. Sean Livingston, who backs up Curry. There is so much talent on this Golden State team that I don't see how they lose more than one home game. And if that's the case, you know, they just have to take care of business at Oracle and then go to Miami, maybe go to Cleveland. Maybe win one game and just take care of business at Oracle and they'll be fine.
46-3. I was just looking at that. 46-3 this season, including playoffs.
Sickening. I think on the flip side of this, I think it's an amazing story that has developed because we're so directly tied to it, and that's the Kevin Love angle, is that he's, of course, been injured and out of this, and he'd been here for so many years, you know, craving being in the playoffs and being in the hunt and trying to get to the big show, and they're at the show and he's not there, and they've done a lot of this without him, and that's kind of the story, is that they've done all of this without him. Now, of course, LeBron's been known to pick a team up, put him on his back and carry it all the way to the promised land. I think Kyrie's, the kind of guy that has assisted that along and made it easier for him this time. And I wouldn't count him out of this. I'm with you. I think Golden State is going to take this thing inevitably. But with Kevin out of the mix, I mean, we clearly won that. We clearly won. What had to happen was getting rid of the one guy that had all the money tied up, the leadership issues. I think a locker room that was in total disarray if we were to know the truth, and because of Kevin Love. I think so. And to move him and to get what we got back in return, I mean, he's not there, and they're in the finals, and he's probably looking at another team next year. Who knows? Boston is being rumored right now. But I just think it's amazing that we got Andrew Wiggins out of that thing, and they got stuck with the guy that's always got the issues.
Now, there's this incredible narrative about David Kahn, the old Wolves GM, who didn't give Kevin Love the maximum contract, and people criticized Kahn for so many years, and it probably was a terrible decision at the time, but look what it led to. It's led to Andrew Wiggins coming here. It's also indirectly led to the number one pick coming here, and now it's laid a foundation in Minnesota where they can be successful for many years to come. Meanwhile, Kevin Love's value has been reduced because the Cavs have shown that they can win without him at a high level, and Love is staring at a lucrative player option for next year. I think he wants to leave, but I also think he knows that he's got that money guaranteed. He may not fetch max money anymore on the open market. We're not sure where his value lies, so he may wind up in Cleveland for one more year, and if he picks up that player option, who knows, maybe the Cavaliers try to put him on the market, shop him a little bit, see what they can get, maybe add a draft pick or a young piece.
How bad was the setback you're talking about with his rehab during the celebration? I mean, was it are they talking something? I mean, because he was saying yesterday that he's going to be good to go opening day, and it's going to be in Cleveland. Now
he's tweaked it. Supposedly he's tweaked it in a large Jerry Jones, Chris Christie-like celebration. Apparently, he ranted and raved. It wasn't sort of like the broken hands doing knuckle push-ups. It's not quite as bad, but almost. What happened to it?
He was celebrating with one of his teammates, giving him a hug, and he just reached his shoulder up and embraced him. And so he said, oh, man, my shoulder hurts. And then someone had to come over and say, are you okay? It looks like his recovery is at about 6 months or 5 months, which would put him probably mid-November, which is not opening day.
No, it's not. It's about a month and a half into the season.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny. Kevin Love at his very finest again. I don't think they get along with him very well in Cleveland if he's healthy or not. I don't think that he's a good fit for the Cleveland Cavaliers myself. I don't know if he is anywhere. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Twins a little bit. They're on a roll, and that's the story. I mean, that's the story in this town, is that the Twins are whooping some ass. It's been a long time. Let's talk about that, and got a couple of segments left, so join us for those, won't you, please?
Bowser with a huge lead at first, the trail runner. Drive to left field, and hit Dave Colabello back off the warning track. Here comes Hicks. Here comes Dozier. Hunter has put the Twins in front.
Twinkies getting it done again. Radioactive sports superstar Mike Morris with Brian Murphy today and tomorrow. Ben Holson stepping out for a couple days. We have Sam Ekstrom behind the big board running the show. And, you know, it's just been fantastic talking about Twins baseball for once in a long, long time. They are putting things together. I don't know exactly what it is because we all have cited the fact that they're sort of mediocre at everything, but good as a really super good as a team. That's why they're at the top of the American League right now. And if, of course, the playoffs began tomorrow, we'd be in pretty good shape. But they don't start tomorrow. I just want to make that announcement. They don't start tomorrow, though. What can we pinpoint this big change of chemistry or attitude on?
Improved starting pitching, situational hitting, better defense, professional defense, and maybe a little bit more of an aggressive attitude from Paul Molitor. I mean, that's and they've had some breaks, too. I mean, they've had some things go their way. And let's see what they do against the Tigers at some point, too, because they, I think the last time...
2-7 against Detroit.
2-7, and I was in Detroit when they covered them there. They were outscored 39-8 in Detroit in six games. So, you know, they got to figure that out as well. Even though Detroit isn't the pace setter there, they're still technically the most experienced team in that league division. Along, you know, the Royals are going to be there at the end, too. But let's see where we're at come All-Star break. But I think what I've been saying all along is enjoy the run. Enjoy the product that's been put out there. It's not just about getting beer and sitting in the sun at Target Field. It's about actually seeing a professional, competent, promising ball club that, you know, hey, may end up finishing 500, but so what? Enjoy the ride.
I agree. I'm a person that kind of believes in the chemistry and the karma and the synergy of a clubhouse or a locker room, not the shower Brandon Warren. They won't get that. No one will get that. No one will understand what that was, but it was pretty funny, right?
Yeah, your mind could definitely wander.
But let's move on. Let's just move on. But I you know, the chemistry, I think, on this team, the Hunter thing, the Molitor part of it. I mean, why does Aaron Hicks just suddenly come to life? I mean, not to say that he's going to, but
because he probably knows
there.
It's his final chance. That'll do it.
That'll do it. But I mean, just the confidence finally oozing out of the place, and then fun. They seem to be having fun. They seem to be. You know, you see them all coming in after a win, and the outfielders coming in and taking the big bump in the middle of the field.
The fog machines, the disco ball.
See, I think that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes to make this game fun for them finally. Instead of 90, we know we're going to lose 90 games again.
A sneaky reason why I think they've been good is Neil Allen, the new pitching coach. Mm. He's come in and he has done a great job. He's incorporated the changeup. That's his favorite pitch to use, and the pitchers are using that as sort of a strikeout pitch a lot of times with it, like a 2-2 count, 1-2 count as that change of pace. But that's the big difference, because the offense is doing what we expected the offense to do. They were top 10 last year. They're top 10 this year. But the pitching that's been worst in baseball over 4 years is now middle of the pack, and that makes a huge difference. And especially when the bullpen's closing people out, that helps tremendously, since the bullpen isn't quite as taxed since the starters are getting deeper into games.
That's incredible. And that's a great breakdown, too. Do either of you think that this can get even better if Santana comes back and proves that he's the real deal and puts it and grinds out some innings?
Well, I think he's certainly going to be looked upon to pull some weight after not doing anything other than essentially, you could argue that he wrecked the first week of the season. I mean, that club had a decent spring. Everything went smooth. Yeah, everybody's in good spirits every team is coming out of spring training. And all of a sudden, 2 days before opening day, your big free agent acquisition gets popped for steroids. And I think they were really shell-shocked going into that first week. But here's the thing. I mean, he's going to bolster the rotation, but he's going to also make for some interesting decisions. Somebody's going to lose a job. And it's also, he hasn't been there all year. He hasn't been under the disco ball doing the chest bumps and dancing around in the fog machines yet. He hasn't been a part of this yet. That doesn't mean he's not going to be productive, and that doesn't mean he's not going to be a great addition.
Yeah.
It just means it's going to be a little bit tricky because he just hasn't been with the club. And, hey, if they do continue a magic ride and get to the postseason, he can't participate because of his decision to take a banned substance. So it's kind of an interesting...
Only help get him there for the
for half the year, and then he's got to take a C again.
And then here, go sit down again. That is just wrong. That could ruin the chemistry of what's already happening right now by him coming in and not getting it done, but still having to stay because they've got so much money invested in him. And then at the end of the year,
they're going to have to find someone else.
We'll take you, and you have to replace what he's been doing, and he was on fire. Oh.
It's not a good situation. A little silver lining, though, is that it's essentially buying at the trade deadline and getting a pretty good starting pitcher without having to give anybody up. I mean, the Twins are probably going to be right on that line where they might be buyers at the trade deadline trying to add another piece for the stretch run. But now that they're getting a quality starting pitcher in July. So now they can, not have to give anybody up, bring in Santana, and that can be like a makeshift trade acquisition and hopefully get them over the hump.
I can see that too. I mean, I just am amazed by this team and what they've done to catch themselves when they were in a free fall. They were in a tailspin off that first week. And I agree with you. I think a lot of it was morale. The club, the people upstairs all the way down through the club to see Santana sitting there for 80 games. I mean, I think it wrecked him for a while, but to have the gumption and the will and the assertiveness to stand up and fight and get back out of it and get your attitude back on and find themselves where they're at right now at about 50 games into the season. Number one in the American League is pretty good. I don't know if any of us expected that, especially without Santana. We have the sillier side of sports coming up. You won't want to miss this one because there are some good ones. And we've had a lot of good ones, but this one might take the cake. It really might. And we have a true superstar at the end of the show. Come on back. Well, we've come to an end. It's the last segment, and we always save some really, really silly stuff for the end of the show. We call it the sillier side of sports. Go figure. And then we also have a true superstar at the end of the show. I've been doing that for a long time, well over 14 years. Been doing the true superstar. So we'll always end the show that way. We promise you that. And so with that being said, Ben Holson is gone today, and he'll be gone also tomorrow. Brian Murphy will be back with us. But Sam Ekstrom has compiled what I think is one of the better, sillier sides of sports in a while. Go ahead.
Johnny Manziel, good old Johnny Football. He's out of rehab and he's back in the news. Attended the Byron Nelson golf tournament over the weekend and couldn't resist getting in a little trouble. Threw a water bottle at an 18-year-old kid who was hounding him for an autograph and then started insulting Manziel when he refused to give him one. My question, why is Johnny Football getting provoked by an 18-year-old punk?
Wouldn't you know it? Johnny Football, the guy that's pretty much, he calls his own shots. He's arrogant beyond belief, egotistical, flipping the crowd off. He's flipping everybody off, flipping the bird, right?
Yes.
A couple times during the season, during a game.
Unacceptable.
But he learned. He said he came back and he apologized. He's always really good in these apologies, these statements afterwards where he's, I'll never do it again. Well, doesn't take much. You know, he's gone through rehab. Joe Thomas came out and said he's a different kid. The coaching staff, well, we really like what he's done so far. He's really seemed to change everything up. And then this. He hasn't learned anything.
Well, and if you're going to get goaded by an 18-year-old, which is bad enough.
That's bad.
And you're going to hurl a water bottle at him, and you're an NFL quarterback, you should drill him. Because then the kid can come back and say, nice throw.
Yeah,
nice. I mean, that's just not a place you want to be. I mean, if you're gonna throw something at a kid that deserves to be popped with something, and you're an NFL quarterback, you better hit him.
Yeah, no kidding. You want the kid to stand up and say, man, nice pass. I didn't catch it. I caught it right in the face, but it was just... It was sailing so fast, but yeah, the kid should still be trying to wake up from that shot, but I don't think he even hit him.
So there was a nice charity basketball game played over the weekend. Lil Wayne, I believe they call him Weezy in the business, he was involved, and he started a bench-clearing fight at this event Sunday night in St. Louis, and here's the great irony of it. It was a charity basketball game for nonviolence.
What?
Perfect. Say that again.
It was a charity basketball game to promote anti-violence, and Wayne spit on a referee and started a bench-clearing altercation.
What in God's name is going on, man? What's wrong with the world, man?
Did he get hosed on a call? Was the charity not being funneled into the money not being funneled into the right direction?
The ref said he didn't buy his albums.
He did not. Well, see? That would do it. What is he doing? What is Lil Wayne thinking he's doing at a little basketball outing like that? Just have fun.
There's violence.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, getting uppity about a bad call.
Yeah. I mean, you can be a fan.
Now, I could deal with the confrontation with the ref, but he ignited a bench clearing brawl?
Yes. Apparently there's video.
There always is.
I think it's amazing that you would sit at a basketball game. You're a big, big, big name. You're a big celebrity. You wouldn't want to draw too much attention to yourself at one of those. Participate, raise some money, get out of there. Go home. No, not so much. We're going to start a bench clearing brawl, and Lil Wayne, back up to it again. Just like his lyrics, like the lyrics to all of his songs, he really does live the part, doesn't he?
He does.
Unbelievable. So I what are they going to do to him? Is there a price to be paid?
What
any
can
charges?
You do?
I mean, are charges filed or not?
I believe the TMZ article said that there were police involved, but knowing who Lil Wayne is and this, what was at stake, I'm guessing this will just blow over.
He has enough money to make it go away.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
I think so.
Let's put it that way. So, and it was what was the charity again, please?
It was an anti-violence charity event.
Okay. Is anybody pro-violence? Is there like another one of those?
I'm going to have one of those next week.
And they, their charity events, they just sing Kumbaya in the crowd.
And
they sway back and forth.
Yeah, of course. I mean, my God.
Backwards.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to start one of those pro-violence things. That's another thing I probably shouldn't have said on the show. That's all right, though. I'll correct that tomorrow. What else do we have?
Bruce Jenner is going to be named Caitlyn with a C. C-A-I-T-L-Y-N. She posed on the cover of Vanity Fair. And we will see Caitlyn Jenner at the ESPYs in July.
I can't wait. And for any woman who is already named Caitlyn, does that ruin your name somewhat?
Ooh, I didn't think about that.
Are there any Caitlyns that became Bruces?
I think he goes a date. I don't know. Look, this is going to be interesting, right? I mean, because I think he's had significant work done since the Diane Sawyer interview. And he was leaving it open at that time. I watched the whole thing. He said he was going to leave it open as to how far he was going to go. with it. Get it? And I don't know. So it's amazing. I mean, he's been this ever-changing man into this person that he wants to be, or that he feels he is inside. And that he's made some dramatic changes, even up to the Diane Sawyer thing. But I've seen pictures since that are remarkably different. I mean, there's some significant changes already.
It's fascinating. I mean, beyond the social issues that he's obviously taking on, or she's taking on now, for certain people, people of a certain generation, certainly you and I mean, we know what he was like in the late 70s. I mean, Miss Captain America. I mean, he was Mr. America after the 76 Olympics.
You better
believe
it.
And to have gone 35 years sort of living a lie, and then also subjecting yourself to the whims of the Kardashians on national television.
Yeah.
I think he got rolled, and he's finally taking ownership of his life.
Yeah, he did.
Her life.
I mean, can you imagine living in that misery and to watch the story? And I watched the whole thing. It was a fascinating story. And you know, he went to Graceland College, about 30-40 miles away from my hometown, Centerville, Iowa. I mean, then he was the decathlon athlete that he was, and went on to the Olympics and won huge and was on the Wheaties box. And that was
on the Hollywood circuit. He was the love boat and everything. I mean,
absolutely.
He was the guy.
He conquered manhood really good. Let's see if he can do it on the other side. I don't know. But what pain you must be in to go through that and to have that kind of success and those kind of achievements and still just feel trapped within yourself. That's incredible to me. I don't know. But we'll find out more at the ESPYs, where it's gone and how far it has progressed.
So we'll probably see Kim there too. I mean, and Kanye and the whole gang. Or
probably so. I don't know.
Isn't it interesting that suddenly Kanye West and Kim Kardashian seem like the most normal ones in that family?
They're the most conservative. I mean, like Bruce said in the interview when he was Bruce, I always had the story. I mean, the story was always me.
Yeah.
Just no one knew it. But it was going to come out.
He knew it was going to come out.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a trump card you're laying down late in life.
Swinging from the fences. He just threw that one at him. Anyway, he wins that one. We have a true superstar for the day. I want to thank Brian Murphy also for coming in today and filling in for Ben Holson. He'll be in tomorrow also, so you can enjoy him tomorrow on the Radioactive Sports Show. Sam Ekstrom, thank you for everything, compiling everything that we need for this and putting one together. And now the true superstar, I have Army Staff Sergeant Alex A. Viola, 29, of Keller, Texas, assigned to the 3rd Battalion, 7th Special Forces Group, Airborne, out of Eglin Air Force Base, Florida, died November 17 in Kandahar Province of wounds suffered when his unit was attacked with an improvised explosive device while on dismounted patrol. Army Staff Sergeant Alex A. Viola is my true superstar. Keep him in your hearts and prayers, if you would, please, as your evening goes on. Good night.